Welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Broadcasting live from New Zealand, the fabulously fluoridated island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's a freaking gorgeous day. There's not even a single chemtrail. But, oh my God, doesn't happen very often. My very special guest is Dr. Victor H. Fisher. Now, nesting instinct. What can you tell us about this?
Okay, the interesting, that leads us into another interesting area about the how the brain is designed.
Now, you say the word designed as opposed to evolved. Is that on purpose?
Well, initially, it's just like any computer. You have a bunch of components that is you call the hardware, and every computer has exactly the same elements. They have a RAM, they have a CPU, they have a hard drive, they have IOs, inputs, keyboards and mouses and monitors and all these sort of things. They're all exactly the same, but they don't work the same way. Because there, some of them, in fact, I just put a new motherboard in my computer, and it's just like a different machine. It has different capacity. And in fact, in my book, I make this correlation between computers and the brain. To explain much of how the brain is structured, the architecture. Because basically they both have to do handle data the same way. And the response has to be the same. So it's not a big surprise that they are they're almost identical. In the case of the brain, It has multi memory systems. They have up in the frontal part is the short-term memory, and then in the middle and the back, just before the occipital area, where the optic system works or processed, is the long-term memory.
You told me once that women have the long-term memory kind of hardwired in, like they see something in a certain location and they'll remember exactly where it is, which is the reason why I always lose my stuff and I always ask my missus if she can find it, and she always can.
No, you were close. I was talking about at that point was the short-term memory. They have a bigger a much larger capacity in the short-term memory than the male does. But that's all that is, just like adding a little bit more RAM. So they're having a higher gigabyte of RAM than the male does. But because here again, the male doesn't really need a lot in that area. Like animals don't have hardly none. Not necessary for you to have a lot of short-term memory. German shepherds that Pavlov use have virtually no short-term memory, and he was dealing with the long-term memory. In fact, interestingly enough, your short-term memory, which is your conscious memory, when the short-term memory shuts down, which it does first, about a half hour before the long-term memory shuts down, you lose consciousness. So consciousness is determined by the short-term memory. And in many cases, especially retrospective individuals, the conscious part of the mind is, in most cases, your worst enemy. So the subconscious is your best friend. And why I say that is that the long-term memory, the subconscious part of the brain, is your intuitive memory. The data that is located in the long-term memory is only answers. There's no connection to answers to questions, and there's no way of determining why that answer is there. It's just there. And the reason for that is that it's much more efficient that if you have a conflict, you have a question, you just want an answer. You don't care how you got that answer. You just want an answer. And in fact, in information theory, no information can pass without a preceding a question. All information are answers to questions, even in information theory. Now, in communication theory, which is slightly different, the question is not necessary. It's all you're doing there is dealing with data. You're not trying to resolve anything. But the only way that you can get into long-term memory, the answers into long-term memory, is that that particular question or particular answer has to be repeated many times. Pavlov said that it had to be at least 12 times. The response had to be inputted at least 12 times in a short period of time. And then it gets into the long-term memory. Now, the long-term memory has both EEPROMs, and using the analogy of computer memory, which means that it can be added or changed, and it also has just ROMs, which is hardware. And so, when I talk about the evolution of survival questions, that evolves over many generations. Many hundreds of generations, really, because the environment doesn't really change much, and so your questions or your responses are just replicated, many millions of times, and so that allows a hardwire answer rather than a conditioned answer from your environment. So that would be what we would call just a random read-only memory, and those are things like, for instance, in the case of the female, many college-trained females, especially, get sucked in that you have to learn how to be a mother. And nature took care of that long, long, long time before there was ever a college. So that's a survival, what I call a survival intuition or survival ROM answer. The human species would not survive if every new mother has to be taught how to be a mother. And this is the same memory system that the mother bird has to build not only how to build a nest, but where to build the nest. Because if she builds a nest on the ground, needless to say, the egg's going to get consumed.
Now, this goes back into the nesting instinct itself, and this I believe we had a conversation about this a while back about moving house and how it's really traumatic for a female, whereas a male not quite so much.
Well, the problem with the, again, is what we talked about earlier, and that is that the female has so much new data that she's being thrown at her, this is a very catastrophic event to move because she has to destroy, in a sense, her present nest, and then she has to build a new nest, and the opportunity of not knowing, how she did it in the first place becomes very traumatic, because she's got to, she knows she's got to do it, but she doesn't know, how did she make those decisions in the first place? Because again, it's intuitive. You only have the answers, and never how do you derive those answers? So you could try to reevaluate where your mistakes were, because the data is already there. It's not a mistake. That's why I was saying that that your subconscious, intuitive mind has all the right answers. Or usually has, as far as survival is concerned, they have the right answers. Now you can have, in the book, I do a case study on the movie Beauty and the Beast, and in that movie, the Beast generated a beastly like attitude because he could not, after he was converted into the Beast, could not imagine anybody ever loving the Beast, so he had a lot of time between when he was converted into morphed into the Beast to the time that the flower dropped its last petal, which would have made him a beast forever. But by a change in his environment with Belle, the beauty, his real nature came out. And that real nature was a prospective and a loving person, which surprised Belle, needless to say. But in the female, see, again, this illustrates that the brain is different, that the only a minor amount of like the short-term memory is different, but only slightly. Her sensory system is just so overwhelming with data that she just goes into and this is sort of normal. They just go into a state of almost shock. Some comfort, TLC, on the male's part, as long as he's sensitive to this condition and is supportive of her challenge, then everything works out very good in the long run.
Yeah, and this is just kind of like a quiet, reassuring, understanding, don't worry, baby, I'll help you rebuild the nest.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, see, like, I was the first undergraduate to major in genetics at Ohio State University, and therefore all of my courses in my major were graduate level courses. Which included PhDs as well as some master's.
Hold on, what exactly is an undergraduate? Is it kind of like Phantom of the Opera? He lives under the stage, or?
I'm sorry, what was this?
What exactly is an undergraduate? Is it kind of like the Phantom of the Opera, how he lives underneath the theater?
No, that's the first 4 years is the undergraduate. And then you have your master's, which is a couple of years usually, and then you have your PhD, which is another 2 or 3 years on top of the master's. So the but the undergraduate is your bachelor's degree. And so during my bachelor time, I was taking only. By the time I graduated, I had taken every graduate course in genetics. And if I would have gone on for a master's, I'd have to go to another university because there was the Ohio State wasn't. I had already taken all their courses, so I had as an undergraduate in my first 4 years had a PhD level training. During that time, I also was assigned a research project. And my research mentor was doing work with mice. And so we had a big mouse room with about 1,000 mice in that room. And I noticed that the male mouse was very supportive of the female in only one area. And that was that he would the bedding was cedar chips, and so the he would chew up the bigger chips to make a softer bed for the female when she was nesting and just before birth of the little mice. But as soon as the kids were born, he would just go off to this corner of the cage and had no interest, no concern about what was going on. That was mummies.
All right. Well, we'll talk more about this after the break. Victor H. Fisher, Dr. Victor H. Fisher is my guest. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And if you don't know that all these shows are archived yet, go to TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com and check out the radio archives there because there's copious quantities of interviews we've done with many, many people. A lot of knowledge to absorb. We'll be right back.
Are chemtrail geoengineering programs changing our weather and destroying our environment? Why in the world are they spraying?
They want to create a storm in the southeast, then they'll start engineering out over the North Pacific. That's where the trailies will be.
Find out why critics are calling Why in the World Are They Spraying the most important film that is revolutionizing the environmental movement. Go to whyintheworldarethespraying.com for more information.
It's just going to get worse until the point where we're not going to be able to grow anything at all unless it's a Monsanto genetically modified abiotic stress resistant seed.
Why in the World Are They Spraying? New international version with languages available from around the world. Go to whyintheworldarethespraying.com for more information.
It's all about money, and weather is another form of commoditizing, a way the Central Command Group can commoditize another form of our life.
Why in the world are they spraying?
And if you control the weather, you're going to control the planet. It's that simple.
Do you realize every day we are being put under constant stress from wireless radiation? What's worse is that you don't even know that it's happening. It puts as much stress on our body as if we had a constant viral infection, draining our energy and sapping our strength, or just making us irritable and fatigued. These wireless fields are being emitted from computers, microwaves, mobile phones, power lines, and any electrical appliance. Now there is a solution. A group of research engineers in New Zealand have come up with an active shielding device that shields you from wireless radiation at a cellular level. Blue Shield comes in three models, a household, portable, and USB that plugs into any computer. The great thing about Blue Shield is it is very affordable and guaranteed to last. A one-off purchase interest will see you being protected for years to come. Visit AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on the Blue Shield banner. Blue Shield, brought to you by the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
Just look at us. Everything is backwards. Everything is upside down. Doctors destroy health, lawyers destroy justice, universities destroy knowledge, governments destroy freedom, the major media destroys information, and religions destroy spirituality. I think there's more to know here.
What you hear about in this country is our differences. That's all the media and the politicians are ever talking about, the things that separate us, things that make us different from one another. That's the way the ruling class operates in any society. They try to divide the rest of the people. They keep the lower and the middle classes fighting with each other so that they, the rich, can run off with all the money. Fairly simple thing happens to work. If you know anything different, that's what they're going to talk about. Race, religion, ethnic and national background, jobs, income, education, social status, sexuality, anything they can do, keep us fighting with each other so that they can keep going to the bank.
Your natural organic herbal formula for heart health is Heart and Body Extract.
My name is Van, and I'm 68 years old, and I live in Vermont. In the spring of 2003, I started to have problems with my heart. It felt like my heart was pounding, made me feel breathless. I tried many, many different things to try to get some help for myself. Nothing did anything.
Heart and Body Extract is very powerful, very effective, and works quickly.
I saw one of Sharon's ads and ordered Heart and Body Extract. I noticed a difference quickly, within days. The episodes became less frequent, and by a month, I completely vanished.
Usually, you find a 30-day or 60-day guarantee. Heart and Body Extract comes with a lifetime 100% ironclad money-back guarantee. Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. Call 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Get the real truth behind the news. Join us Thursday evenings, 4 p.m. Central, for the Region 10 Report, brought to you by Suzanne Posel and OccupyCorporatism.com.
Look at me, driving, and I won't stop.
Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and psych medication that turns you into a werewolf, if you lose your sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts. Anyway, we wanted to talk about mental health and mind control. Now, Victor, you were explaining to me over the break that mind control is actually a lot more simple than people realize. It's just fear, really. And now I know why the media and the government have so much control over everybody. And conversely, the police as well. You know, whenever I see a cop in front of me with that blue uniform and a big smile, it scares the living piss out of me.
That's true. Here again, when we, from our research, we found that there is a continuum, but on a normal curve between prospective people and retrospective people. And what I mean by those two terms is that on the extremes, let's start from the middle. There's actually about a third of the population is in each of those three classifications, and about a third of the population it would be prospective, which means that at the extreme, they are very highly anticipatory, correctly. And so when we were talking about the intuitive memory, I said that the intuitive memory is always correct. And so your first answer to any conflict is usually correct. And when then you have the opportunity to analyze, if you're prospective, you'll get the same answer. If you're retrospective, you get an opposite answer, which then puts you into a dilemma because it's in the same brain. You have two different answers, and they're opposite each other. So you have to, the only way you can resolve that dilemma is go to an outside source, either another human being or a library source or Google a source to break that tie, that dilemma. But the middle group is non-anticipatory. They can't anticipate anything, and in a large sense, they're the happiest, because if you have the capability of being prospective, you usually are cast an outcast, because two-thirds of the population can't understand why you are that way, so two-thirds of the population is either non-anticipatory or is negatively anticipatory.
Can I offer something here? This reminds me of Dr. Bob Melamed, who's been touring U.S. universities talking about cannabinoids, endocannabinoids specifically. And he talks about how our culture is currently split between what he calls blips and flips, forward-looking people and backward-looking people.
Yeah, that's basically a good way of describing the retrospective and prospective. The retrospective only can operate out of the rearview mirror. They can't see anything forward. And so this is why they are always in a state of fear, because it's sort of like the blind person coming to a curb. He can't see that it is a curb until he gets some other external information, either a seeing-eye dog or his cane or something else. Otherwise, he wouldn't move at all. That's just sort of it. They do get a good sense of location in their house or in their room and where the furniture is, but don't change the furniture because that blows them away. But that type of sense of location of things in their room is the same CPU reaction to sighted people making sure that the objects are located where they're supposed to be, that you can actually touch a frame of a picture when you reach up your hand and it's really there. You're not missing it from your visual input. So consequently, the retrospective individual, and that's what really the word retrospective means, is looking at what has happened already, the historical events rather than future events. And the prospective is obviously anticipating a future event based on your input, your data input, connecting all the dots, so to speak. So the consequently, both the retrospective and lesser so for what I call the normal people, non-anticipatory.
Is there a middle ground here? Like you said, there's prospective and retrospective, and the middle is just spective?
Well, they're what you really would call the normal. The normal is non-anticipatory, and the most normal is one that is in the middle between physically motivated individuals versus mentally motivated individuals.
Is there a minority or a majority of one group or the other, or is it just kind of similar?
Well, as I said, it's like a normal curve. And if you look at a normal curve, the majority of the population is right in the middle. You have the loop that goes up in the middle, and then it drags out at each end to a lesser number of people. The farther out, the extremes have only like 1 or 2% of the population, whereas in the actual middle, that's 50% of the population is in the middle. Mm.
It sounds like what Noam Chomsky calls the political class. So there's about 20% of the population that have some kind of thought about the future or the past or whatever. The rest of the people are just kind of relatively unaware, don't really think about it. And at the moment, in this point in history, I see a small minority of really forward-thinking people who are trying to advance the whole human race together, and a very small minority of really backward-looking control freak individuals who are trying to stop them.
Right.
Well, and everybody else just kind of caught in the middle.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It really, the extremes is the ones that unfortunately, the bias as far as leadership is concerned, the bias is for the retrospective. Because they are very extremely defensive about their lack of capability of being anticipatory. And so that, just imagine getting up in the morning and trying to figure out whether you should even get out of bed. That's what the kind of situation the retrospective have. In fact, when we were working at the hospital, The psychiatrist would call that the white knuckle syndrome, that when they wake up in the morning, their fists are clenched, and when you clench your fists, you'll notice your knuckles get white, and so that's what the retrospective symptom is one of those symptoms, is that they're just saying, gee, should I get out of bed, because if I get out of bed, I'm going to be confronted with a conflict situation, and which I'm not going to be able to resolve. So they try to minimize the conflicts.
In order to minimize the conflicts, they simply minimize changes. They minimize differences happening. They attempt to make sure that each day is the same as the last one.
That's right. Well, and also what you have, too, is that they procrastinate. So when they do have a conflict situation, they won't resolve it right away. And so they just keep procrastinating, hoping that the conflict's going to go away on its own.
Mm. You know, that sounds an awful lot like a government. I was speaking to some people the other day, and they sent this list of questions, and they all seemed to be rhetorical questions as far as I was concerned. They're pretty obvious, you know, in terms of maxims of law and whether or not the government's tyrannical. And what was interesting is that the vast majority of the responses that they received were no response at all.
That's right.
You know, it's just like, I don't like this. I'll ignore it and hope it goes away.
Right. Well, see, the government is a good haven for these people, as well as teachers, as well as lawyers, because nurses, because they don't have to make a decision. In the case of the lawyers, they have books, the law book, they're in their library. That's the answers. And so professors, deans, are mostly retrospective. But government is obviously has an operations book. And so that has all the answers that their pay grade allows them to have.
So these people would always insert themselves into bureaucracies of some kind.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, the bureaucracy is a great place because the best defense a person can generate is a strong offense. And so if you become the leader of a group or leader of a country, they have all of the tools to be offensive. They have the controlling capability to generate wars, you know, like Hitler and Stalin and all these other guys. Mm. That's a defense mechanism.
Yeah, I've always found some of the most offensive people are those that are in positions of authority.
Right. So they're driven to that. Because that's their defense mechanism. Ooh, gee.
On the other hand, trying to change these people.
It's impossible.
It's not possible, you say? You're retrospective for life?
Yeah, from birth.
From birth?
Right.
What causes this? Is it some kind of genetic. A genetic malfunction or something yeah. like that? Like well, I have a well, genetic a predisposition to being a control freak douchebag?
Well, no, let's go back. When I first started, walked into that mental hospital, I said, gee, this is, these people are, have been put on, you know, this is they're victims. And after a while, when I found out that there were 30% of the population were like that, inside and outside, we had the full span. We had patients that were prospective. We had patients that were in the middle. We had patients that were retrospective. So that the population inside a mental hospital is almost identical to the population outside the mental hospital.
And that's interesting because I often feel like I'm living in a giant open air mental hospital sometimes. Right. You know what? Another thing that's interesting is that you don't know who the crazy people are when you go into a mental institution because the people who are there non-voluntarily seem crazy, but the people who are there working seem psychotic.
Well, see that's where our research was very helpful for on a clinical point of view. The best thing to be able to do from a clinical aspect is know what you can change as compared to what you cannot change, and that's again like the Beauty and the Beast was that Belle, by changing the environment of the Beast, morphed him into being the Prince Charming. But he started out as both a prospective and ended up as prospective. That didn't change. But since she was prospective, and that was illustrated very much in that movie, that she was prospective because she was different than the village. Mm. And the village knew that she was different, and she knew she was different.
Okay.
The village were all non-anticipatory. They were doing the same thing day after day after day after day.
Yeah. See, I always wondered that mentality behind calling one person the village idiot, where it's like, for me, most of the village are idiots, and there's usually one person who isn't. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Now you and your family and friends can enjoy the cleanest, most delicious, and healthy drinking water anytime, even while traveling, camping, at sporting events, or in emergency situations. The Berkeleyte removes bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful chemicals to below detectable levels. It also reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury, while leaving in the beneficial and nutritional minerals your body needs. Berkeleyte is so powerful, it can even purify raw, untreated water from remote lakes and streams. And the optional PF2 filters even remove fluoride. The Berkeleyte LED, with its rechargeable lighting system, can be used as a nightlight or a camp light. To view or purchase your Berkey water system and replacement filters, please visit American Freedom Radio's website at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey banner. Once again, that's AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey water banner. Not yet available in Iowa.
I knew a man who had a reputation helping thousands of people improve their health. You know his secret? He knew 7 out of 10 people were deficient in one critical mineral. The symptoms of this deficiency mimic everything from heart disease to anxiety. In fact, the list is way too long to even touch on. Chances are high that you may have many of these symptoms already. In a moment, I'm going to give away his secret when you visit IncredibleMineral.com. That's IncredibleMineral.com. The information is free. It will take less than 5 minutes for you to obtain. Listen in as I interview world-renowned doctor of the future, Carolyn Dean, share the secret with you. No holds barred and guaranteed to piss off the big drug pushers. In fact, there's also a $50 free bonus offer for the first 1,000 people who listen in now at IncredibleMineral.com. Hurry while the information is still available.
I don't like words that hide the truth. I don't like words that conceal reality. I don't like euphemisms. And American English is loaded with euphemisms because Americans have a lot of trouble dealing with reality. Americans have trouble facing the truth. So they invent a kind of a soft language to protect themselves from it. I'll give you an example of that. When I was a little kid, if I got sick, they wanted me to go to the hospital and see the doctor. Now they want me to go to a health maintenance organization. Smug, greedy, well-fed white people have invented a language to conceal their sins. It's as simple as that. The CIA doesn't kill anybody anymore. They neutralize people. The government doesn't lie and engages in disinformation. Israeli murderers are called commandos. Arab commandos are called terrorists. Contra killers are called freedom fighters. Well, if crime fighters fight crime and firefighters fight fire, what do freedom fighters fight? They never mention that part of it to us, do they? Never mention that part of it.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
Welcome to the world's meeting place. American.
It's practically narcotic.
Freedom.
Oh, yes. I like very much.
Radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christopher Green. Make sure to tune in to Green Wave Radio every Tuesday and Thursday from 3 to 5 p.m. Central on American Freedom Radio. Hard-hitting and in-your-face, America.
Welcome back. All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment that we have today with Dr. Victor H. Fisher. You can buy his book if you're in the United States off of Amazon.com. It's called, let me see if I get this right, Improving Your Thought Process. That's Improving Your Thought Process from Amazon.com. You can pick that up now if you want to explain a little bit about that, Victor, before we wrap up the show. You kind of already have, haven't you?
Well, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
The book is in a downloadable format and is designed to be applied on a tablet. Needless to say, Amazon, since they supplied their own Kindle tablets, prefer you to buy their tablet, but it, It will work on your iPads and the other tablets that are available. And also for free, they'll give you a download a program that you can put it on your computer. So you can. That's the way I look. I don't have a tablet, and so I read the book, or I have many of the books, Kindle books, available on my in my library, because they're relatively inexpensive, and they are nicely accessible. In fact, you can, in some of them, are restricted. You can't make copies, but mine, you can make copies of sections of it. It would be tedious to do it otherwise. It's nicer for me to read it on my 19-inch screen than it is a little 7-inch tablet.
Yeah. And it's not a surprise to me that you don't have a tablet. As I understand it, you're not on any medications.
Pardon? What was that, Larry Brown?
It's no surprise to me that you don't have a tablet. As you've informed me, you don't take any medications.
Oh, gee, yes. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Upon, that's the difference between our the English language and other languages.
Is that really it? Is the English language exclusively the uses of puns?
I guess so. Since there's 3,000 languages, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, it would be hard to tell unless you spoke all of them. And if you did, I mean, be interesting,
see,
wouldn't it?
This is another interesting aspect about the brain, is that it allows 3,000 different languages, so that that must mean that it's that every one of those are translatable into another language. But the brain is easily adaptable to learn foreign languages.
Mm. Have you ever seen the movie The Fifth Element with Bruce Willis? He says, "Lady, I only speak two languages, English and bad English."
English and bad English, right. Yeah. Well, what's interesting here in China is that in the schools, they teach British English, and but the government publications in English is American English. So you sort of, as a linguist, I sort of wonder who's running the show.
Yeah, I was watching. There's a TV show on last night, and this American dude and a British guy, and British guy says, "Oh my God, what are you doing over here?" And the American guy goes, "What language is he speaking?" He says, "I'm speaking English." He's like, "I speak English, man. That doesn't sound anything like it."
Well, during my youth, I had an opportunity to take with a buddy of mine a bus ride from America up to Canada, and it was an overnight ride on the bus, and sitting near us, or next to us actually, was a girl from Scotland. And I could not understand her for at least 2 or 3 hours. Slowly, I was able to adapt to it, but it certainly wasn't English. It was Scottish.
A friend of mine said that the Scottish accent is a mixture between the Irish accent and alcohol.
Could be.
Close enough.
Yeah. But talking about books, I'm starting yesterday, actually, writing, collating my next book, which is actually a second version update my first book that I ever published back in 1967. And it is involved in teaching English, American English. Utilizes the what we've been just talking about, the research that I gleaned that long ago from our experience with the Heifrig. And it has been very, very successful. In fact, we had a very interesting situation. It was tested down at the McGuffey School at Miami University in Miami, Ohio. And professor of the reading department had tutored some students, adults, really. He was tutoring adults. A pair of mentally retarded twins came in to learn how to read and write. They're both were married, and they were so illiterate that they were totally their wives were the only source of survival.
This wasn't by chance George and Jeb Bush, was it?
Touché. Yeah, it could be. No, they weren't, because they're not twins.
My bad.
But this one student, adult student, the first 5 words that they learned in their first session contained the word in, I-N. And when he came to that word and was told what it was, he just glowed. And he says, so that's what that sign is on the door at the supermarket. He saw this I-N. And he had no idea what it was until he saw it in the first lesson. Now that's really having a real problem as far as being able to survive. Really, if you're that illiterate that you can't even read, or understand what the IN is, but. He ultimately learned 1,000 words, but the most important aspect, which is what I'm trying to bring out in this new book. The old book, but it's been revised. Is that the only way that you can really learn a foreign language is that you must think in that language. You can't just translate. Try to have some of these phrases that, where's the bathroom and what's the different ways of describing your needs, how to get a taxi and things like that. That is not is a total waste of time, because the only way you can communicate is by thinking in that language.
You know, that's interesting, and I think this might be an interesting thought to wrap up the show with, because people in my field, what we call truthers and what have you, I've come to the conclusion that we speak a completely different language to the rest of the population. When we say the words chemtrails, fluoride, or vaccines, or tyranny, or freedom, or something of that nature, a completely different brain and a completely different meaning is actually coming across. And I think part of the trauma of waking up to how the world really works is learning this different language of what things right. really are supposed to mean.
Well, look at the youth that we went through, where they would take the word bad and flip it on its head, saying, you know, bad is good.
Yeah.
You know, that was a bad, thing happened.
Yeah.
Which really say that's really good.
Yeah. Well, I think this conversation's been totally badass. Thank you, Victor. Dr. Victor H. Fisher, ladies and gentlemen, you can get his book, Improving Your Thought Process, on Amazon.com. It's been a great pleasure, and at 83 years old, you're still clicking your brain synapses in a reasonable format fashion. Congratulations, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me on.
All right. See you again sometime, mate. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening in to the archives for the show up at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and also at AmericanFreedomRadio.com, plus the YouTube channel. Every day we have a version of it. That's Mr. News Guerrilla Media on YouTube. See you again sometime.